From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, an inside look at the State Department and the Supreme Court takes center stage. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Reagan Republican, and Christ follower. On Thursday of this week, before the president announced his nominee for the Supreme Court, Tony Perkins sat down with Senator Mike Lee of Utah to discuss the judicial nomination process and what the Senate will face over the next few weeks. Senator Lee is a member of the Judiciary Committee and will be a key part of the confirmation hearings in the coming days. Here's Tony Perkins.
Senator, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Tony.
All right, this is going to be quite significant in what unfolds in the next few weeks. And I want to start, let me just start this way. Let me ask you, if you have, among those nominees that are being discussed, we have three appellate court judges that are being talked about, all three female. The president made very clear it'll be a female. We have Judge Lagoa, we have Judge Coney Barrett, and we have Judge Rushing that's been talked about. Do you have a preference of among those three?
I do. My preference among those three is Amy Coney Barrett. She's a distinguished jurist, lawyer, and legal academic. She serves currently on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit and has for nearly 3 years. She was a law clerk to Justice Scalia, and she's a jurist who has been trained in the mold and would follow in the footsteps of great justices like her former boss, Justice Scalia, my former boss, Justice Alito, and Justice Clarence Thomas. That's exactly the kind of nominee President Trump has promised to nominate, and that's exactly the kind of justice we need on the U.S. Supreme Court, someone who will read the law based on what it says rather than on the basis of what some lobbyist or sociologist or psychologist might want the law to say, but in fact doesn't.
I would agree with you based upon my understanding of her track record. Now, this is a significant appointment to the court because, you know, going back to the Warren Court where we've seen this broad application of judicial preference in, judicial fiat in creating statutory, acting as if they were creating statutory law. This would be the first time that we could possibly see a conservative, stable majority on the court.
It certainly could be, and it what I prefer to think of there is a solid majority of people who are just willing to interpret the law based on what it says.
Right.
Now, if that makes it conservative, so be it. Whatever that is, that's what we want. We don't want our jurists making law. We don't want our jurists engaging in social engineering or taking hot-button political issues of the day that ought to be resolved in the political branches of government or by the states and decided by judicial fiat by a group of lawyers wearing black robes. That's not what we're interested in here. What we're interested in is restoring the proper balance of power between the federal government and the states and between the three branches of the federal government.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. In terms of conservative, when I think conservative, I think of Constitution, abiding by the Constitution, staying within the boundaries created by the founders. And that applies to the legislative branch and the executive branch as well, operating within the confines of the authority and power given to them. But you mentioned Amy Coney Barrett as a favorite. That sets up the conversation that I was having with Senator Graham quite well when I asked you this question about faith, because when she was confirmed for the appellate court, that was that memorable moment when Dianne Feinstein talked about the dogma within you speaks so loudly. I mean, that was a direct attack on her Catholic faith.
It was. It's a direct attack on her Catholic faith and on faith itself. It was utterly inappropriate. It's incompatible with the spirit, if not also the letter, of at least two provisions of the Constitution. The Article 6 ban on the application of religious tests, and not to mention the First Amendment. It's also just inappropriate and unnecessary. Perhaps most startlingly, Tony, it reveals the fact that there is something of an anti-religious sentiment that has come to pervade certain political offices in this country. We can't let that be legitimized. Our country was founded by people of faith and founded by people from a diverse array of religious faith traditions. We can't allow the left to demonize believing. What I took away from that hearing when she was attacked by one senator for having the dogma live strong within her, and by another senator for questioning whether she was too orthodox a Catholic, it wasn't just that they were denigrating her for being Catholic. One of those senators was, in fact, Catholic. It was that they were denigrating her for believing too strongly in her religious beliefs. That is unacceptable.
It's frightening, quite frankly. It's frightening that that would be taking place in the United States Senate. Two questions for you, Senator Mike Lee. Do you anticipate that type of attack again on the nominee? And then secondly, how will Republicans respond to that if it happens?
I do anticipate that kind of attack, even though it shouldn't come. Even if I were just advising them for their own political interests, I would advise Democrats not to do that. Because if there's one thing that's going to solidify the American people behind this nominee, especially if it's Amy Barrett, it's that kind of ridiculous, bigoted attack. So it's the dumbest thing they could do on the one hand. On the other hand, I'm not sure they can restrain themselves.
Great.
Because the dogma of anti-religious sentiment, the dogma of religious bigotry, lives strong among today's ultra-left progressives. And so I'm not sure they can restrain themselves. And yes, to answer your other question, if they do that, we will respond with great passion. And I believe the authority of the overwhelming majority of the American people who will not tolerate that. I'm a religious minority myself, a religious minority whose ancestors were ordered exterminated by the governor of Missouri in 1838. I don't take kindly to seeing members of any faith bullied in this country. I'm not going to stand for it here.
I agree with you, Senator. I don't think they can help themselves. I agree with you as well that politically it's not to their advantage to do this, because I do think this will be a galvanizing thing. I think much like, Texas, remember the Alamo, I think this will be remember the dogma. I think this will be a rallying cry for people of all Orthodox faith who believe that there should be space in our society to exercise your religion freely in public and not have to check it at the door of public service.
Indeed it will. Indeed it will.
Well, Senator, we look forward to this process as it unfolds. I know you'll be front and center as a member of the committee. The chairman of the committee, Senator Graham, is saying that week of October 12th, looks like we may be seeing hearings begin. So we're going to get right to it here pretty shortly.
Yes, I look forward to that. We'll be eagerly anticipating and preparing for the beginning of those hearings.
And you anticipate a vote on the Senate floor prior to the election?
Yes, it's imperative that we do so. I've been advocating to the White House and to my colleagues in the Senate that we need to do precisely that. We've got to get this nominee confirmed and confirmed before the election.
Very quickly, before we run out of time, the main reason that has to happen?
Well, the main reason is you never know what's going to happen in the wake of an election, especially in the middle of a global pandemic and an election season in which the Democrats have promised to continue to fight to contest everything at every moment and never give up. We're not in a position to, number one, need more time than we've got between now and the election. Number two, we're not in a position to be taking risks on whether we can get this done. We've got an obligation to do our job that our voters, those who elected us to office, expect us to carry out.
All right, Senator, I know you got to go vote. Go cast your vote. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today, and we'll talk with you soon.
Thank you so much.
You can find out more about Mike Lee when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, find out how you can watch all of the content from the Values Voter Summit, which was held virtually this past week. You can find it all at tonyperkins.com.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
The history of the United States is preserved in archives, books, and the collective memory of the American people. It is also preserved through monuments and memorials that visually represent the extraordinary history of our nation. Family Research Council has a new blog series highlighting the most popular monuments in our nation's capital. This series shares the historical and spiritual themes depicted in each monument. To read FRC's monument series, visit frcblog.org/monuments.
Aw, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed, so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Well, I hope you were able to join our Family Research Council team this past week for our virtual Values Voter Summit. We had so many great speakers, including Christians at the highest levels of government. One of those people is the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. He joined FRC President Tony Perkins for an interview in the Ben Franklin Room of the State Department. Here's Tony Perkins.
We're at the U.S. Department of State in the Ben Franklin Room. We're actually sitting atop the swamp, are we not, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo?
It's great to be with you. It's great to be here at the State Department. This is a beautiful place where I get a chance to host leaders from all around the world. Thanks for letting me be with you today.
Well, when I made reference to the swamp, the foggy bottom,
yeah.
This historically has been a place where politics run deep. There is an agenda that oftentimes runs counter to the American ideals, and that's changed under this administration and under your leadership here at the State Department. I mean, America's first.
One of the things we've made abundantly clear, and President Trump campaigned on this in 2016, and he's talked about it now for 3.5 years, is this centrality, this idea that our foreign policy has to, in the first instance, deliver good outcomes for the American people. So whether that's our diplomatic efforts or our economic efforts around the world, or even the disposition of our forces, the central thesis is make sure we protect Americans and create prosperity and security here at home. The good news is when we do that, when we do it well, you see great things happen. Great things happen for people in every nation all across the world. It's not disconnected to say America first and still want really good things for every human being.
It comes back to leadership, America leading, but it also comes back to leadership here at the State Department. A lot of great people who work here, who are patriots, but in the absence of strong leadership, it doesn't always turn out the right way. And I think under this president, and in fact your appointment here as Secretary of State, we've proven that America can lead and make some difficult decisions. And I want to talk about some of those, Secretary Pompeo. And I want to start by just kind of putting this moment in context for the Value Voter Summit. Again, I want to thank you for joining us at the Value Voter Summit. You've been a speaker multiple times. You came when you were first elected to Congress. You came last year, and it's always great to have you being a part of that. But when you look at the confluence of issues, you know, they got the coronavirus coming out of China. We've got, you know, of course, domestic issues, but we got Iran, the snapback of the sanctions there, China working in Latin America, working with the Vatican, a lot of things happening right now.
Yeah, this is a moment. There's no doubt about that. And I think we have done really good work at setting the conditions all around the world for the flourishing of the human condition. And I say that sounds lofty and ethereal, but it's really connected to real people's lives. And if you think about the way President Trump thinks about foreign policy, it is this idea of principled realism. We can't be everywhere, we can't be all things, but we can demonstrate through the goodness of America, through the economic might and power of America, through the way we conduct ourselves around the world. We defend human rights, the unalienable rights that every human being has because they're made in the image of God. We defend that everywhere and always. We're not always successful, and we use different tools in different places, but that central set of understandings about how America can be a force for good in the world while delivering really good outcomes for the American people is at the heart of what we're trying to do. And whether it's the theocratic regime in the Islamic Republic of Iran or the nasty brutality of the Chinese Communist Party and what they're doing in Western China to their own people. This administration has stood strong. We've used our tools that we have available to us to deliver a better set of options and opportunities for virtually everyone in the world.
You mentioned, Mr. Secretary, inalienable rights. That brings to mind the commission that you formed on inalienable rights that drew a lot of controversy from the left, but it's kind of a recalibration of what are human rights.
Tony, I think anyone who's been working in the religious freedom space and the human rights space over these past years would accept the fact that the central understandings of our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that there's a real crisis. When you see the Human Rights Council at the UN, for example, with countries like Venezuela and Iran and some of the worst actors in the world running those things, sitting as members, we know there's a real challenge. And so what I did, so I wanted to go back and reground how the United States thinks about human rights around the world. And so I formed a commission led by a woman named Marianne Glendon, a professor at Harvard Law School, former U.S. ambassador to the Vatican, and asked she and a commission to go back and look and take the central ideas of our Judeo-Christian nation and lay them across how we think about the principles of our foreign policy. I hope everyone will get a chance. It's about 50-plus pages. You can go read it in 7 languages on our website. Take a look. I think it will remind everyone about why this is, in fact, the greatest nation in the history of civilization.
Well, I actually thought about it last week when I saw President Trump announce the 1776 Commission in the Department of Education. I mean, it'd be great to see each of the departments and agencies recalibrate and go back to those founding principles, which I think that's exactly what the 1776 Commission will do.
Tony, you've seen the conflict here in the United States. This is a challenge for every American to consider. This nation was great because our founders laid down a direction and an opportunity and a structure to create an ever more perfect union. Not perfect. We don't get it right every day. We don't get it right every day all around the world. But this is a country that shows up and makes things better for people. And this is a nation that has made lives better for Americans for decades and decades. And I hope that America will continue to be strong, will continue to reflect the values laid down in our founding documents. And when we do so, we'll continue to make life better for Americans for decades and decades to come.
Well, Mr. Secretary, I think you are a unique Secretary of State. You know, I had the privilege of working with you when you came to Congress, and then, of course, you went on to the CIA. But you're a graduate of West Point. You were a tank commander. You don't back down. And one of the things that I have seen in this administration, several things are unique, but under your leadership here at the State Department, you've hosted 2 international gatherings on religious freedom. And you have stated unequivocally, without apology, that the number one foreign policy of this State Department, reflecting this administration, is international religious freedom.
I believe, President Trump believes, that absent religious freedom, the lives of people around the world are very difficult. Authoritarianism almost always follows the oppression of religion. Pushing religion out of the public square drives oppression, drives authoritarian regimes, and really gets at human dignity. And so we have made that a real priority. The room we're sitting in here today has hosted each of these two gatherings. They're the largest human rights gatherings in the history of the State Department. We bring people from all faiths, people from Judaism, Muslim clerics, Christian leaders of all faiths, Baha'i. We bring a broad group of religious leaders in to talk about how we can bolster religious freedom in the countries from which they come and how the United States can help them achieve that. We think it makes life better for every citizen. We've watched where religion is tamped down, seldom do good things follow.
Well, and I've been encouraged in my capacity at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom to work with you and the State Department in advancing that core fundamental human right. It's not just an American right, but a human right of religious freedom. And that's the ability for everyone to choose their faith. I mean, they have that right. I think it's a God-given right to choose to follow God or not follow Him. But that said, you've also been very outspoken about your Christian faith. You haven't hidden your faith. You've been very clear, even as you have traveled the world.
Tony, I just think people appreciate knowing who you are, that you're authentic, and that you don't hide the things that drive you, the central underpinnings of who you are. And for me, I'm an evangelical Christian. I believe Jesus Christ is my Savior. And I think when I meet with counterparts, whether they're from an Arab state where it's a majority Muslim country, or you're in Israel, a predominantly Jewish country, I think they appreciate people who are consistent and are of faith. They know where you're coming from. We all have different ideas. Those three religions have some centrality. They come, they're all Abrahamic faiths. But they, I think they appreciate that. I started a speech in Cairo with a sentence that described myself in that way. And I still get notes to this day from people all across the world that said, that was bold for you to stand in Cairo and talk about you being an evangelical Christian, but recognizing that the people of Egypt were predominantly from a different religion, but that you could find places where you could work together and make life better for the people of both countries. I think that's the way diplomacy is best conducted, when people are candid and honest about who they are, what drives them. My duty, I swore an oath to the United States Constitution. That's what I do as the Secretary of State. But the person I am is important for people to understand.
But Mr. Secretary, I also think it's important from a standpoint of diplomacy, when you look at about 80% of the world is religious in orientation, and they make decisions based upon those deeply held beliefs. And too often in the West, we've held to this secular mindset that religion has to be pushed out, when the bulk of the world makes decisions based upon their faith. So as a believer who understands that faith is real, and it affects people's lives, I think it gives you an advantage in diplomacy.
Well, I believe that too. We see this in the United States. We see it in many countries. When you can't talk about it, when you push it to the background, you push it aside or pretend it's not part of the process of analysis, you're taking away one of the fundamental elements of human nature, right? We're all made in the image of God. And that drives how people think about their lives, their families, all the things that matter and we hold most dear. So I do. I think it's important. We work hard to make sure that we maximize religious freedom for every human being all across the world. There's days I wish we did better. As you know from serving on the commission, lots of places in the world where religious freedom is not available. That saddens me, and it drives me every day to work to help my team improve the lives of those people and give them more space to exercise their conscience rights.
I want to kind of wrap up our time together by returning to the issue of China. Recently, you had made the comment that the world has awakened to the threat Beijing poses to international security and the global economy. When we see what's happened with the coronavirus, when we see the fact that they're working even into the, you know, not in only Latin America, but even here in the United States to undermine America's republic.
So I'll give you an example. Tomorrow I'm going to travel to Wisconsin, and I'm going to talk about what the Chinese Communist Party is doing right here in the United States. There's deep connectivity to some of the things we're seeing happen in our country, and I see it all across the world. What's taking place in Western China itself, where they are trying to eliminate those who are not Han Chinese. This is one of the worst human rights violations in recent memory, certainly of this century. We watched today the challenge that Christians and Catholics have to practice their faith inside of China. The Chinese Communist Party is attempting to rewrite the Bible itself to cynicize the Christian doctrine. That's unacceptable. That will diminish the Chinese people. We want good things for them, just like we want good things for people all across the world. Oh, we'll continue to work hard on this because it's the right thing for America to do.
When you look at these competing interests, there's really two global ideologies. One, I think, represented by China, a totalitarian, repressive view. And you have America, which is an ideal of freedom, of individuality coming together as one for the betterment of all.
Tony, we see that the world is at a point of tipping. There's no doubt about that. I remember when the Soviet Union fell, there was this idea that history had been written and authoritarianism had been banished from the world. We can now see that that's not the case. There is a struggle. The Chinese Communist Party is seeking hegemony around the world, and we have an obligation to do our best to make sure that the freedoms that we value and the capacity to exercise our human rights aren't trampled upon by whether that's their predatory economic activity or their military might or their information campaigns here in the United States. If we get it right here, I'm confident that people around the world will join us, that those nations that share our traditions and our Western values will also push back against this threat from the Chinese Communist Party, and will prevail. There's a group of people who believe America has declined. I don't believe that for a single minute. This is a nation that is strong and resilient, and I'm proud to have been part of an administration that has understood that and used America's capacity and capabilities and power for good all around the world.
Mr. Secretary, I think I can say this on behalf of the millions of values voters out there. We're grateful that you've been a part of this administration and for your leadership here at the State Department. Thanks so much,
Tony. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You can find out more about Mike Pompeo when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, find out how you can watch all of the content from the Values Voter Summit. You can find it at tonyperkins.com. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.